Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call this Tuesday, March 4th, 2025 session of hearing of State Government Finance and Policy Committee to order. We will jump straight into approval of the minutes from February 27th, 2025. Vice Chair Davis, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Vice Chair Davis moves the approval of the minutes from February 27, 2025. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, we have a relatively full agenda today. First, we are going to have Commissioner Campbell come up and provide a brief presentation. And then we are going to move to House File 10. And then, as time allows, we will get to the Minnesota Historical Society overview. And just before we jump into it, for those who are here to testify, we are on House File 10 when we get to it. We ask that when you come up, you speak through the chair, you introduce yourself for the record, and we are going to provide 2 minutes of testimony for you, and only 2 minutes. So, Commissioner Campbell, please. Welcome to the committee, and I will preface the first part of your presentation based on a conversation that you and I have had, and I think you've spoken to Lead Cleavorn about this as well. Members, you may remember that, was it last week? It feels like longer than last week, but last week, I think, there was some stuff that came out about a training that had been offered inside of MMB that was decidedly anti-Christian, decidedly anti-white people. I immediately sent an email to the commissioner, and I will commend you, commissioner, for responding very, very quickly and saying that this is not what we want out of our department. So I sent you some questions that I think you're prepared to walk through, and then we have a couple of questions from our membership, and then we'll move into your overview. So please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is, okay, I was just wondering, does that help? Okay, great. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Erin Campbell. I'm the Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. And with me today is MMB Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Employer Resources, Blake Chafee. I really appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today. On February 11th, it was brought to my attention that MMB's Enterprise Talent Development was using an article on white supremacy culture as part of training materials for manager and supervisor core training. That article included political content, characterizations, and commentary regarding the Republican Party and Christian faith that were inappropriate and were not consistent with MMB's values or with state training requirements. To be clear, this article should never have been used in any state-sponsored training environment, and I really, you know, deeply regret that it was included in manager and supervisor core training. As soon as the article was brought to the attention of MMB leadership, we directed Enterprise Talent and Development to remove it from all enterprise trainings and supporting materials, and this directive was effective February 11th, the same day that I learned of it. In response to this issue, I have also directed a full review of the content of all of the manager and supervisor core training materials, as well as a review of how this article came to be included in the training in the first place, and we'll hold those people, whoever was involved, accountable. On a personal level, I want to apologize for the way in which this article characterized Republicans and the Republican Party. I do not share the views expressed in the article and, again, regret its use. Enterprise Talent Development provides a variety of training options to state employees, including delivering annual required training to all employees on things like the Code of Ethics, conflicts of interest, prohibitions on harassment and discrimination, respectful workplace policies, to name just a few. Manager and supervisor core trainings are a key tool for the enterprise in increasing the competencies of our leaders. These trainings cover a broad range of issues over several days, including ethics, internal controls, performance management, conflict resolution, labor relations, employment law, and more. And inclusion in the workplace is one of the topics that we cover. We do think that it's essential that managers and supervisors have competency in creating an inclusive workplace for the benefit of all employees in the state as a whole. It's important to remember that there are nearly 40,000 unique individuals employed in Minnesota's executive branch. They come from many different cultures, parts of the states, generations, abilities, political persuasions, and more, and we value what every one of them brings to the table. Our ultimate goal is to make sure state government is doing its very best for the people across the state. And inclusive workplaces help every team member fulfill their professional potential. When employees are engaged, productive, collaborative, they're offering the kinds of innovation and efficiencies that can only come from different perspectives working together to solve the many different challenges that Minnesotans face. And having an inclusive workplace helps us retain employees, which saves the state money and time and creates an ever-growing, ever-increasing knowledge base. And the state of Minnesota's retention rate is the best it's been in a decade, and that doesn't happen by accident. That said, the optional reading that we're talking about today worked against those efforts to have an inclusive, welcoming, and affirming workplace through finger-pointing and exclusion. It's not acceptable to me, and I expect it's not to any of you either, which is why I ordered that the document be removed from usage the same day that we learned about it. To address your questions, Chair Nash, the article was distributed to attendees of manager and supervisor core trainings from April of 2024 to February 11th of 2025. It's not a subject of active presentation in the trainings, but it was distributed to attendees as possible additional reading. In that period of time, 560 employees completed supervisor core and 356 employees completed manager core. The trainings are developed by MMB's Enterprise Talent Development Unit, and that's under the supervision and direction of that director, the director of that unit. As I mentioned earlier, the use of the training ceased as soon as we became aware of it. I don't have any reason to believe that it was ever brought to the attention of any constitutional officer, nor do I think they would have had any prior knowledge of the specific contents of that training. After it was brought to our attention, MMB became aware of one other agency that was using the article, and they have since stopped using it. We're not aware that the article is being used by any other agencies at this time. Just to provide some clarification there, MMB is responsible for enterprise trainings to state agency employees, but agencies may also have their own training programs that where they offer their own sort of agency-specific trainings to meet their needs. You asked if the Deputy Commissioner and I have taken this particular training. I took Manager Core when I joined the Department of Administration in 2016, Deputy Commissioner Blake Chafee completed Manager Core in the early 2010s after he joined the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and so neither Deputy Commissioner or I went through trainings featuring this particular article. With that, I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee and will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have a couple of questions that I'll start off with, and I know some of my members did have some questions as well. Could you give me the numbers of the people of that had been trained under this? It was fairly quickly. Was it 560 management employees and 350-something line employees? Is that right?
Not quite. Mr. Chair, members, in that it was 560 employees completed supervisor course. So those are people who are in supervisory positions across state government. And 356 employees completed manager core. And those are people who are in managerial positions, classified managerial positions. Okay. No frontline staff would have taken these trainings. Okay.
And then you had said that one other agency had used this training. Could you tell us which?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. The agency that we became aware of was the Pollution Control Agency.
Okay, so PCA. And then I will let you know, Commissioner, that I received, I think, 4 emails from folks inside of MMB that were concerned employees thanking me for reaching out to you to talk about this. What is your plan to address this training for those that have received it, and how do you propose to distance the agency, the state, and the administration from the training? As I think we did talk about that you want nothing really to do with this. And again, I commend you for that, because the training for those here in the room or watching for the first time was labeled white supremacy culture, still here, where it talked about a sense of white supremacy, white privilege, Christian hegemony, and generally castigated people who believe in the Christian faith and are white in a way that is inconsistent with what I think you have just said. And I, again, thank you for that. But can you tell me what you plan to do to circle back around with those that have received that training?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, that is something, if you have feedback about that, appreciate hearing from you. We are talking about that. I think that what we know is that we need to communicate back to those folks. We've not had time to draft anything along those lines just yet, but do want to follow up and make sure that we're clear about the fact that that should not have been used in training materials.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Before we move on to a couple of member questions, I think you and I, did we walk into the building yesterday? I'm losing all track of time. It could be due to a lack of caffeination, but
Mr. Chair, yes.
I think as we were talking, I also asked, and I was speaking with Lead Cleavorn as well, I believe you had said that you were looking at other training materials that may be, for lack of a better description, lying on a dusty shelf somewhere that could be used that might also be viewed as offensive to people who are inside the agency and might be used for training. Can you maybe details, and if you don't have a plan yet, I get that, but maybe your thoughts on how to really get to the root of putting forth training that, while trying to train people to be inclusive like this, is not inclusive. So if you would detail that for us.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. We know that the article was used in the manager and supervisor core training. So we're starting with the review of those materials. The next time we have scheduled manager and supervisor core is in March and then April, respectively. We want to make sure that we start with those training programs. If our review is not complete in that time, we will push the trainings out. So we'll reschedule them so that we're clear about the content. And then after that, I think we will look at look at other training programs that we have through the state of Minnesota. And so I would say that the plan is to start with manager and supervisor core, to move on beyond that to places where the article was not being used, but just to be sure that we're confident in the materials. I expect that's going to take some time. It's a lot of content that we need to review, and we want to make sure that the content is compliant, of course, with state and federal law, but also our own policies around respectful workplace and the prohibitions on discrimination and harassment and all of those sort of things. And so is there more detail that you're looking for?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. I'd say wanting to make sure that we're looking for things like this, or for things that might use the word Nazis, fascists, and terms like Christian hegemony, white supremacy, and so on, because there's really no place for that in state government, because as we know, I think the statistic in the state of Minnesota is that roughly 74% of Minnesotans identify as Christian in some form or another. So obviously we don't want to have training that's going to attack the people who are coming to work for the state of Minnesota. So as we move forward, I would appreciate if we could touch base on this from time to time, just as a follow-up, to make sure that we're conducting ourselves in a manner that is reflective of the workplace and the people who come to work for the state of Minnesota as well. So very quickly, we can open it to member questions. Lee Cleavorn.
Excuse me, Chair Nash. I'm just confused about what you said, right? I think you and I both agree, and I believe the commissioner agrees with us as well, that you never paint a group with a broad brush, right? So I believe when I looked at the materials, the word Republican was used once, and it's a rather lengthy article. And I agree that once was once too many. I agree with that statement. But are you saying that we should not have any conversations around what is white supremacy or what is racism or what is, I'm just confused by the last statement that you made.
Thank you, Lee Cleburne. I am trying to set forth a paradigm in which a training piece of material that is titled White Supremacy Culture, Still Here, is never an acceptable paradigm. Thank you, Lee Cleburne. We will now move on to your presentation that we also have members in your packets. So, Commissioner, if you would.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'm going to be joined at the table here by some of my other colleagues, so we'll rotate out here. But next, we're going to provide updates on the implementation of new initiatives at MMB that were funded in 2023, and then describe the governor's budget recommendations for MMB for the coming biennium. I want to start with just a note of appreciation for the committee for the range of investments made to position our agency to better serve our agency partners and build on our cross-agency coordination. Critical amongst these was funds for our enterprise resource planning, and you're going to hear about that next from Deputy Commissioner Raton.
Deputy Commissioner Raton, welcome to the committee. If you would, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Nash and committee members, I'm Britta Raton, Deputy Commissioner at MMB. The 2023 State Government Omnibus Bill provided MMB sustainable funding in 24 and 25 to stabilize and secure the state's enterprise resource planning systems that are owned by MMB and used across all three branches of state government. We had had years of kind of scraping by with these systems without having adequate funding for their maintenance and operation. I do want to note, it's important to note that this funding was front-loaded because of the issue in the tails, and so we had a lot of money appropriated in 24 and 25 with the assumption being that, those funds would be spent over a four-year period, so I just want to be clear about that. We've been hard at work putting these funds to use. First, we prioritized the deferred maintenance to bring our systems back into supported status. And we had been on a cadence of not being able to keep all of our systems in supported status at any given time. So we're nearing completion of that project. And our last system that is still going through a phased upgrade to be in fully supported status is our data warehouse system, and that should be complete in the next few months. We are also now resourced to keep current with upgrades for all of those systems on an ongoing basis, which makes sure we keep those systems supported, which frankly is a huge improvement from where we were on our ERP systems before, so thank you for that. A major ongoing project is for these systems is to move from on-site data centers and hardware to hosting those systems in the cloud. This is also a major transition, and we are hopeful that that full transition will be complete in 2026. And this transition is part of the overall effort to move our systems to the cloud for infrastructure and to create efficiencies and cost savings for the state, as well as improving security for our state systems. So we're also putting resources directly into improving the security of our systems. A recent example of that was the deployment of multi-factor authentication for our supplier portal system, which exists within SWIFT, our financial tool system. And then finally, we're focused on engaging with our agency partners to understand their needs and their experience using these systems. So we're shifting to more of a product model for our systems with ongoing customer engagement with our state agency partners who use these systems on a day-to-day basis. And this learning is helping us focus our improvements to these systems on what's most responsive to that feedback from customers. So we have a few current projects underway, as well as discovery work happening in other agency or areas. The current projects that are underway include development of a new job application system, as well as a financial planning and analysis tool that's in development as well. So I'm going to quickly move through some other agency initiatives from 2023 and just give you an update on those. So listed here are three new functions we added to MMB after the 2023 session to respond to some identified needs. So first, we have the initial work underway for the new internal audit unit at MMB. That will provide services to agencies that do not have their own internal audit staff, and many of our small agencies do not, or need additional assistance with an internal audit, as well as advisory services from MMB. We have hired all the staff for this unit and have set up the policies and procedures and have now begun that initial audit work. Secondly, we received funding for a new banking unit that is providing dedicated management and oversight of the state's banking operations. Just want to make clear, we've always had a banking function, but it was embedded underneath our financial reporting and accounting unit and didn't always have the resources it really needed to do that work at the level we would like it to be done at. So now that we have this dedicated function, we have built out increased automation of our reconciliation of our major bank accounts. We've integrated our cash management functions, which was kind of in an old legacy system. We've implemented an integration with SWIFT, as well as our online financial procurement and reporting system. And then additionally, we are supporting new accounts with more kind of direct service to our agency customers that are establishing new banking relationships. I will speed it up, Mr. Chair. So finally, we also established a federal funds implementation team that has also been hard at work coordinating on enterprise projects, maximizing federal investments in the state of Minnesota. And I won't go further into detail there. The other item I just want to call out, because this was a big area of work for MMB in the last 2 years, was MMB received funds for the Implementation Office for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. This was created to put children at the center of state government with a permanent state agency. So DCYF was established in statute, but the funds to coordinate all of those moves were appropriated to MMB, and we built out an implementation team. They are temporary staff that would serve for 2 years, and you can see some of the key accomplishments there on the slide. But essentially, they coordinated the hiring of the leadership for those new agencies, as well as the transfer of all the employees, and then coordinating between the agencies and MINIT on all the IT transfers as well. And I'll skip past that one and pass it over to Deputy Commissioner Bentley.
Okay, Chair. Thank you. So Chair Nash, Lead Cleavorn, members of the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Andrew Bentley. I'm a Deputy Commissioner in the Management and Budget Department, and I oversee our Planning and Policy Division. I appreciate this opportunity to share more. The 2023 State Government Omnibus tasks our agency with enhancing planning and interagency coordination concerning the state's future. One of the responsibilities I took on when I started just over a year ago is to start a long-range planning team. The goal of this team is to improve the quality of life of Minnesotans and support effective and efficient government by addressing critical long-term issues that don't live cleanly within the statutory authority of one agency. So similar to other teams within MMB, such as the results management team, the long-range planning team is nonpartisan, technical, and analytical. As of January of this year, we have hired and onboarded our team of 11 and a half people. The team has wide-ranging professional experience, including planning at the municipal, county, and state levels. Team members have planned all over the state and worked closely with tribal nations. Some of their academic degrees include applied economics, architecture, and public health. In an effort to gather perspectives before planning begins, the team is currently engaging Minnesotans all over the state, as well as business communities, academics, and state experts. And just one example of that outreach, the team recently conducted in-person interviews with 7 directors of regional development organizations to gather input. Those were in person to gather input on important issues for the future of Greater Minnesota. So now I'll share just a bit about the Office of Addiction and Recovery. The Office of Addiction and Recovery supports the Subcabinet on Opioids, Substance Use, and Addiction, as well as the Advisory Council of the same name, which works to improve outcomes for Minnesotans experiencing substance use disorder, their families, and communities. The office joined MMB in 2023 and has worked to direct resources to address the opioid epidemic, including organizing the development of the state's first naloxone saturation strategy and coordinating efforts with the Minnesota Medical Association and Minnesota Sheriff's Association to improve substance use disorder treatment for incarcerated Minnesotans. And then the health subcabinet. The 2023 Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill included a provision establishing the health subcabinet at MMB to coordinate work among the 5 agencies most involved in health and healthcare in the state. The goal of the office is to bolster interagency collaboration on big topics that impact the health of Minnesotans across the state. In its first year, the health subcabinet established a strategic framework for long-term planning efforts that puts people first, focuses on outcomes, and improves affordability. Thank you.
Ms. Raton.
Mr. Chair, I will quickly zip through our budget recommendations if we have time for that.
I think we're okay for 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes. so please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, I will cover these at a rapid pace, so if anyone wants follow-up, please reach out. The first recommendation is our agency's operating adjustment. You have likely seen a similar request from other agencies. This is a recommendation that covers a portion of the growing costs related to maintaining operations, such as healthcare costs, FICA, Medicare, utilities, IT, and compensation. This doesn't cover the full cost, anticipated costs of that growth. And so you can see on the slide, we have been making efforts to create efficiencies and reduce costs in other areas to meet the needs of the next biennium. Our next request is for an oversight package. Portions of this package were included in the governor's fraud prevention proposal that was released in early January. I will highlight just a couple pieces of this request. The first is that this request includes 3 additional staff for our internal controls and accountability unit. That unit has just 5 people currently, and they work across the state enterprise to help essentially consult and advise and work with setting up tools and policies within agencies to improve their internal controls. Given the events of the last couple of years, we think we need more capacity in this space. Additionally, the recommendation includes 4 staff for our statewide payroll services. There was an OLA audit that highlighted issues with retroactive pay adjustments last spring, summer time. And we realized we need more capacity in that payroll office to not just do the payroll processing with agencies every 2 weeks, but also to do some proactive engagement with agencies, some auditing of their payroll practices, as well as building out a consistent training curriculum across state government to make sure all payroll technicians have the same content and training before they start their work. There's also a couple of other places where we're adding staff, one in our enterprise labor relations team, 2 staff there, and 2 staff in our accounting services division to really focus on improving policies and procedures. This kind of feeds into that internal control space as well. We want to make it easier for our state agency partners to comply and do things correctly. The next 3 requests are actually reductions in that create savings in the general fund. So the first item, MMB received a $10 million appropriation for the transition of DCYF. Much of that appropriation was not spent in this biennium, and it's because some of those costs won't really be realized until the next biennium. That agency will at some point be moving to new office space, but they are currently leasing from DHS some space and anticipate that move coming in the next biennium. There's also still some costs to be incurred for IT transitions. And so this recommendation would cancel $8.5 million from that account and then reappropriate in the next biennium $6 million, but appropriate that directly to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families so that we can draw down federal match on those funds. So we would draw down federal match totaling $1.92 million, which means on the whole, this whole package for DCYF saves the general fund $4.4 million. The next recommendation is a reduction in the funding for the data disaggregation project. This was a project housed at MMB in the 2023 session. We are recommending, excuse me, reducing that appropriation by $1.7 million in 2025. The data disaggregation work is really focused on getting enterprise-wide data standards so our data can better talk to each other across the enterprise, and so we can draw better conclusions as we're looking at populations across the enterprise and whether programs are effective. We think we can still move forward on this work with less resources, so we are suggesting a reduction of $1.7 million. Very quickly, this next one is also a savings to the general fund. In the 2023 session, a transfer was passed in law that would begin in 2025 for $450,000 each year from the general fund to the housing support account. So the dollars were set to be transferred to that account starting in 2025, but those dollars have not yet been programmed for any stated purpose out of that account, and I think that was to be left to a future legislature to determine. At this point, given the budget constraints, we are recommending eliminating that transfer. And then lastly, our final recommendation is really an enterprise-wide recommendation that would allow carry forward at the end of a biennium of unspent operating funds within state agencies. This would really help agencies manage over time, plan for longer range projects at their agency, and it would align the carry forward authority between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And that concludes the overview of budget recommendations.
Okay. Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners, thank you. I think the big elephant in the room is what does Thursday hold for us? So I think we might get to have this conversation again in a different format, depending on what we find out on Thursday. So thank you for the presentation. I will have a little conversation with you offline about the ERP, because I'm excited to hear where that's going and grateful for greater use of cloud, because that saves us a tremendous amount of CapEx and OpEx as we move everything that we can to the cloud. So appreciate that effort very much. Unless there are some pressing, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I did just want to say that I know in the last few years you and I have had a good deal of conversation about where MMB was from a technological standpoint, some of your legacy systems, the need to do a lot of these upgrades that are really critical to the mission of MMB and to our state. And I just wanted to say, for those folks in the room who maybe aren't aware, the difference in where we are today versus when we first started having that conversation is like night and day. Adding in things like multi-factor authentication, moving to the cloud, customer experience portals, making things more efficient. I am just astounded at how far we've come in such a short time. And I just wanted to commend you and the agency for your efforts, not only to dive in deep on getting those things done, but also to making it happen and being where we are today. It is truly remarkable how much we have accomplished in just a few short years. And of course, as always, thank you for all of your work on the TAC as well. Thank you.
All right, we will go briefly to Representative Kraft and then Lead Cleaver, and we'll close.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, really briefly back to the training discussion. Sorry I didn't raise this point then. It seems to me if you have something where you've issued this apology. To me, one of the most important things is to figure out how in the process it happened and what you need to change in that process. And my understanding was you're looking at that, but I would very much appreciate, you know, hearing back, like, what you found and how you're changing the process.
Yeah, Commissioner, may being presumptuous, when you return probably down the road after you've figured all that out, we would love to have you back in the committee to talk about that, because I think all of us want to make sure that we're not doing those things. So once you get that accomplished, let Lead Cleaborn and I know, and we can make sure to schedule time for you if that takes care of Representative Kraft's question. Okay, Lead Cleaborn.
Thank you, and I'll start with thank yous to Mr. Bentley, Deputy Director Bentley. Thank you for meeting with me, explaining to me the work of your office, and I really appreciate the fact that you are driven and focused on finding those really good efficiencies across all of our agencies and making sure that our plan is working and that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. So I want to thank you for that great work and the people of your team as well. So thank you. Ms. Rattan, I would like to ask you just a little bit about, you know, the enterprise is huge, right? And we kind of gloss over MMB, right? Can you just tell me how many state employees the work of your office touches?
Ms. Rattan, or Commissioner, or whoever would like to take this.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, we have just under 40,000 state employees,
right.
But our for instance, we have health insurance for all state employees and their families and retirees, and that touches about 120,000 people, I believe. Our reach is far.
Right.
Lee Cleburne.
Yeah, and the reason I wanted to make that public is because when we talk about the efficiencies that you can provide in your office by these systems, and when we talk about the interface of the systems, these are real people behind all of this and real work behind all of it. So I thank you for your dedication to that as well. And then just going back, I cannot thank you enough for the quick response that you provide to us whenever we have questions or concerns. And the piece about the trainings that you talk about, and you kind of glossed over the fact that you have one of the highest retention rates now. And I want to thank you for the work and that you do for people living with disabilities, because as we talk about this inclusionary work, that impacts individuals living with disabilities, and that changes that you have made in your trainings and in your programs have really met the needs, and you are continuing to strive to meet even more needs. And so I appreciate your work in that area as well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming here. I've already gotten some texts as to some of our members that would like to reach out for a little bit more information. Once again, I think Thursday is going to shine. It'll shine some light, whether it's good or bad. We'll find out more. But as we do so, we'll look forward to hearing from you and chatting about more on the budget. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, next on the agenda, we have House File 10. Representative Schultz, if you'd like to make your way to the testifiers table. And since Representative Schultz is not a member of the committee, the chair moves House File 10 to come before the committee with a referral to Ways and Means. And once again, for members of the public who are here to testify that may not have been here when we started off, we're going to try to make sure that you get 2 minutes for your testimony. We want to make sure that we hear everybody, but we're also asking that you keep your comments to, one, the section of the bill that we have before us, which is Section 1. That's lines 1.1 through 1.14. And then we'll get to member questions and so on. So, Representative Schultz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I begin opening remarks, would we like to take a look at the A2 amendment, which is my author's amendment?
Chair moves the A2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please discuss your amendment, and we will then take a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, especially as it pertains to your committee today. A2 seeks to clarify the language in this bill. throughout the conversation during the session, I have found that there were additional questions around exactly how broad the original Section 1 of this bill was. And so with the A2 amendment, this seeks to clarify, bring our state agencies and local municipalities a little bit more certainty as to exactly the programs that would be impacted by this bill, and give them greater clarity as they seek to make those changes to their programs with this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. So this amendment is to put the bill in the form that you would like?
That's correct, Mr.
And,
Chair.
Representative Freiberg, we will allow, as we do, the author to put the bill in the form that he prefers, and then we can...
This is a question to the amendment specifically.
Very well, Representative Freiberg.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I noticed the motion was to move this to Ways and Means. Representative Schultz himself said that this is to give me, this amendment would give municipalities more clarity, and you referred to the original language as really broad. I would say the way the language was originally drafted, it should go to the Elections and Government Operations Committee, just based on the fact that it talks about notwithstanding any law to the contrary, that would include state and local laws. But this amendment maybe narrows it a bit, but it actually makes it in another sense clearer that it needs to go to the Government Operations Committee. It says it changes the language to refer to a state agency or political subdivision. So I see Chair Quam trying to read his expression to see if he agrees with me. I'm not. He just took off his. but this seems like a pretty clear case. Would it be your intention, Mr. Chair, to change the referral if this amendment goes on to refer the bill to the Elections and Government Operations Committee?
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. The motion is to refer this to Ways and Means.
Okay. Well, that's a little surprising, just because, you know, this is basically a preemption bill. It's telling local governments what they can spend their money on. We heard two preemption bills in the Elections and Local Government Committee yesterday, so I would move to amend the referral motion to send this bill to Elections and Government Operations, and I would request a roll call.
Representative Freiberg moves that the referral be changed from Ways and Means to GovOps and Elections. He has asked for a roll call discussion to his motion. Chair Quam, any?
Mr. Chair, I was just thinking that we already had a motion before us, and procedurally I did not think that we could, you know.
Okay, the assistant will take the roll. Chair votes no. We are taking up Freiberg amendment, a motion to move to Government Operations and Elections. Chair votes no.
Chair Nash?
No.
Vice Chair Davis?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Clardy?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Howard?
Yes.
Representative Jones?
Yes.
Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kraft?
Yes.
Representative Quam? No. Representative Sexton?
No.
There being seven nays and six ayes, the motion does not prevail. We will now move on to the vote on the amendment to engross into the bill per the author's wishes. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? The motion, the amendment is adopted. So, Representative Schultz, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Nash, Lead Cleavorn, and members of the committee. I'm Isaac Schultz. I represent a district in central Minnesota. It's a great pleasure to be before you. This is my first time in front of this committee, and just appreciate you being here this morning. As we know, Minnesota is facing unprecedented challenges with a looming budget deficit of $5 billion, and we don't have time to waste in getting after this challenge and ensuring that tax dollars that Minnesotans pay follow and support Minnesota citizens and those here legally. Families are hurting and struggling through the rising cost of living, and Minnesotans don't want to see their tax dollars going to fund people who have broke the law to come here to benefit from our public programs. Whether it's MinnesotaCare, the North Star Promise, or the Working Family Tax Credit or housing tax credits, these benefits should not be provided to people who broke the law. Because of public programs and benefits like these, Minnesota has become a magnet to people from foreign countries, which is the ultimate redistribution of wealth away from hardworking blue-collar Minnesota families. House File 10, the bill before us today, can help cut a projected $100 million plus in spending in the next biennium by making a change to the eligibility requirements for public programs. Why should people who broke the law to come here benefit from our public programs? Why should they pay less than working families with a two-income household living paycheck to paycheck trying to provide for their kids? During the years of the Walz administration, we've seen over $500 million in waste on fraud specifically, and simply by the way that the public programs over these last 2 years with complete Democrat control, we have opened up our state programs and tax benefits to people who are here illegally and opened the door for more fraud in Minnesota. And it's my goal with this bill to close some of those loopholes. So it's our time right now to change these eligibility requirements for Minnesota's public programs and to stop the waste, fraud, and abuse of our tax dollars. I look forward to your comments, your questions, and ask for support of House File 10. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. We have a list of testifiers, and we will call them up. I'm going to call them up as to, using a little baseball terminology, who is at the bat and on deck. So we have Paul Doten and Alyssa Thuma. So if both of you would proceed to the testifiers table, we will deal with Mr. Doten first. And please remember that we have 2 minutes for you to offer your testimony. And then in the hole, we have Roderick Barrows. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Paul Doten. I'm from Foley, Minnesota. I want to say thank you, first of all, for letting me speak. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around why such a bill is necessary, but given the past 4 years of our open border policies, I understand. When people have come into our country, as Mr. Schultz has said, they're breaking our laws. And last time I checked, when you break our laws, there's not a reward, there should be consequences. And the consequences should not, or the reward should not be a free education. I have two beautiful daughters. My daughter Ashton is going to be graduating from nursing school this spring. She's worked tirelessly to keep her grades up. And on top of that, she's worked as a CNA and a TMA to pay for her education. My daughter Lauren is going off to Mankato State this year. She works as a lifeguard and a swimming instructor. And she works as she's a volunteer in the Unified Club, and she, which helps special needs kids. She volunteers as at MHS, which helps Special Olympics kids. Both my beautiful daughters work tirelessly in school and after school to support our community. They're both taxpayers, although so slight because they're of their age, but they're still contributing to our society and working hard. And for that, their reward is they get to pay for their education. They're here legally, and it should not be a punishment. And I'm struggling really, really bad to understand why my taxpayer dollars could potentially be paying for somebody here that has broken our laws. Again, consequences, not rewards. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Doten. We have Alyssa, is it Thuma or Thuma?
Actually, Thuma.
Thuma. Okay, my apologies. I don't always get these right. And then Mr. Barrows, if you would come to the testifiers table. Ms. Thuma, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members, for allowing me to come and speak this morning. My name is Alicia Thuma, and I'm a registered nurse that lives in rural Minnesota, and I'm here to speak in favor of House File 10. As a nurse, I fully understand the needs for people to be treated, and this bill does not change that at all. Everybody has the right to receive that medical care that they need. But what it does do is it restricts that those healthcare services are being funded by taxpayer dollars for people who are here in this country illegally. In one of the previous committee meetings, EMTALA was referenced, which stands for Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, and that is a federal guideline put forward by the government to require anybody who presents to an emergency department to be medically screened, regardless of their ability to pay, regardless of their legal status, they have to be screened. And that's not going to change. This bill doesn't change any of that. But the issue that this bill addresses is, should healthcare services be paid for by taxpaying dollars to those that are in this country illegally? I talk to patients every day I'm at work, and there's many Minnesotans that are struggling daily on how they're going to use their limited resources. I've had patients tell me, am I going to pay my mortgage this month or my healthcare premium? You know, do I put food on my table or buy these prescription drugs? Why should their tax dollars, when they themselves are struggling to pay for their own healthcare, pay somebody who's here who chose to enter our country illegally? It shouldn't. That's for me, that's what the bottom line of this House File 10 is about. And I just thank you so much for your time today, and I appreciate you coming, you know, allowing me to come and speak to you. I know illegal residents in this state are not able to qualify for the Medicare and Medicaid. And why should it be different for Minnesota Care? If they can't qualify for the Medicaid and Medicare, why are they allowed to qualify for Minnesota Care? The guidelines should be the same. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would request a yes vote for this House File 10. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thumma. Mr. Barrows will be up next, and then we have Joshua Musakanto, if I got that pronounced correctly. So if Joshua would come to the table. Mr. Barrows, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to honorable members of the committee. My name is Roderick Barrows, and I come to you this morning as a disabled veteran of the Minnesota National Guard. And I wish to speak with you about this bill and something that you don't hear about in the media, and that's the allocation of our tax dollars, the allocation that should be for our Minnesota veterans instead of where it's currently proposed to be going, and that's for our illegal immigration allocation. Currently, right now, the state of Minnesota, according to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, 2024's last budget analysis showed that Minnesota is currently housing approximately 652 homeless veterans that are registered in the state of Minnesota. That's last year's numbers. And of those, approximately 47% are from the seven county metro area. Another staggering statistic is that people don't like to talk about is 101 Minnesota veterans die every year. This is from the 2023 statistics, die from suicide. These are facts. These are not made up numbers. And of those, 45 out of the 101 came again from the seven county metro area. The reason I'm bringing up the seven county metro area, I'm not coming to you as a Republican. I'm not coming to you as a Democrat. This is a bipartisan issue. I'm pleading to both sides of the aisle here. We can reallocate these funds that need to be better spent. You're not hearing about it in the media. You're not hearing about it in Washington. We need to reallocate these funds to support our veterans. I'm sorry that we can't support illegal immigration. There's legal avenues to come into our country. They can take advantage of that. We need to take Minnesota's citizens first. It's our duty to represent all of our constituents, Democrat or Republican. It's our duty to take care of our citizens first. We have an obligation to them. They elected us to do that. And I am imploring you to please look at that. Take that into consideration. When I enlisted into the military, nobody promised me buckets of gold. Nobody enforced me or forced me to do it. I was not drafted. I signed a blank check to this nation saying that I will pay whatever it needs to be to include my life if necessary. All I ask is that my nation do the same for me and for my fellow veterans. And I think that saying no to this is just the wrong thing to do. We need to reallocate these funds to where they're better spent. And I'm sorry, there's legal ways to come into this country. We could reallocate these funds to help support our veterans. We could reallocate these funds and support what is needed Thank you for your time.
Mr. Barrows, let me thank you on behalf of the committee for your service to our country. We appreciate very, very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Musakantow, if I got that right, and then afterwards we will have John Benda. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joshua Musakantow, and I work at RSM Plaza as a Level 2 security officer. I am here today on behalf of our union, SEIU Local 26, that represents over 8,000 hardworking blue-collar janitors, airport workers, condo workers, security officers, and high-rise window cleaners. I am speaking today in opposition to HF 10 and the proposed exclusion of our fellow Minnesotans in critical programs like healthcare and higher ed. At previous hearings and this hearing, this bill was presented as a defense of, quote, hardworking blue-collar workers. And as someone who works a blue-collar job, I am appalled that HF 10 threatens to cut off families in our communities from basic needs like health care, and moreover, that it is allegedly being done in the name of people like me. During my time as a union steward and organizer, I have seen workers, regardless of their backgrounds, come together to fight for better wages, benefits, and respect. HF 10 wants us to believe that workers like me can't make gains unless undocumented people lose. What I believe is that we can only rise up together. This bill is meant to divide working people as a distraction from the real issues that keep our families up at night. I wish you were expanding affordable health care, protecting union rights, and lowering the cost of education for all of us. This bill is little more than a trial balloon for those hoping to test how far they can push austerity policies. Today, it's our undocumented neighbors they are going after, but tomorrow, it could be programs that benefit me and my family that they will try to slash, all so that the super rich don't have to pay taxes towards the public good. Working people are mad at rising costs and stagnant wages, yet billionaires and big corporations keep getting richer and richer. Maybe instead of adding restrictions and red tape that make it harder for the most vulnerable among us to seek aid, you should instead be focusing on billionaires who are doing everything they can to squeeze every last penny out of us so they can fly to Mars. I don't believe denying our neighbors access to programs they have earned will make my life better. Choosing the scapegoat immigrant families does nothing to address my growing health care costs and rising cost of living. If you want to support hardworking, blue-collar Minnesotans like me, stop bashing immigrants and use your power to take on the greedy corporations and billionaires who are the ones preventing us from being able to live our lives. I ask you to vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Musakantow. We have John Benda, and on deck we have Julia Decker. And then in the hole we have Reverend Harold Oserto. Mr. Benda, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is John Benda. Thank you, Chair Nash and committee, for hearing my testimony. I'm here to testify in opposition to House File 10. I'm a leader with ISAIAH and with ICOM, the Minnesota Interfaith Coalition on Immigration, which walks in support of immigrants to achieve justice and opposes systems of oppression. I have gained an appreciation for our immigrant brothers and sisters. A large part of that is due to my experience as a teacher in St. Paul Public Schools, particularly during my last 10 years at Humboldt High School on the West Side. I had students from a variety of cultures there, including Somali, Hmong, Latino, Karen, Vietnamese, and others. This former Iowan that grew up with virtually no diversity learned to love and appreciate those students and their cultures. My experiences with our immigrant clients through ICOM has solidified my appreciation of our immigrants and educated me on the pain many of them have gone through and the struggles they experience finding food, housing, furniture, work, and legal help. Some would say people like the ones I'm describing aren't worthy of the assistance that Minnesota Care and the North Star Promise would allot them. Some call them criminals and label them as rapists and murderers, while their greatest offense is really just a civil violation. Undocumented immigrants contribute greatly to our state. They pay hundreds of millions of dollars in state and local taxes annually. And don't forget, they were on the front line during the pandemic. They add billions of dollars to our economy and fortify our workforce. We need them. Why wouldn't we want to keep them healthy and give them a chance to improve their education? Keeping them healthy and offering them an opportunity to attend college gives them a chance to stabilize and improve their lives, which in turn makes all of Minnesota more stable, more healthy, and a place where we can all thrive together. It seems to me that is exactly what Minnesotans value. Please oppose House File 10. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Benda. Ms. Decker, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. And then Reverend Asartro, you are up next. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Julia Decker. I am the Policy Director at the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota, or ILCM. ILCM is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that provides free legal services to low-income immigrants and refugees in Minnesota. We're here to respectfully voice opposition to HF 10. We recognize the author's amendment clarifies the scope of the bill, but we remain deeply concerned about the impacts that this bill could have on vulnerable Minnesotans. Some of you may not be aware that legal immigration processes can actually take months, years, or even decades. Non-citizen victims of crime, asylum seekers fleeing torture, even children trying to escape abuse or human trafficking may face long stretches of time where they are not documented but not undocumented because their application is one of many in a long line of cases waiting to be decided. Some people are eventually able to access work authorization at some point while their application is pending, but their immigration status itself still remains in limbo. Our clients include people in these situations who already are facing barriers in accessing things such as healthcare and critical assistance. HF 10 would increase rather than decrease these barriers and make it harder for people like our clients to access the legal immigration system at all. So we respectfully ask the committee to vote no on HF 10, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Reverend Asartro, if you would, introduce yourself for the record and proceed. And up next is Reverend Martinez. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm the Reverend Yerel Osorto, and I serve as pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I sit before you today because the proposed bill, House File 10, clearly opposes my faith and would harm the community I serve. HF 10 makes a mockery of Christian values. I follow Jesus Christ, who healed others as a sign of God's love and who challenged the definition of who deserves care. Jesus' parable of the Samaritan traveler makes clear that showing care is more important than shared citizenship, even if such care comes at a financial cost. Many members of St. Paul's are not yet U.S. citizens. Let me share a story of one such member, a high school student who, due to threats on his life, made a harrowing journey to the United States at the age of 16. After a year and a half, he could no longer suppress the trauma inflicted upon him, and his anxiety and severe depression overwhelmed him, leading to constant suicidal thoughts. Fortunately, access to quality care in the clinic hosted at St. Paul's saved his life. After consulting with the medical team, he received the mental health treatment he desperately needed. And I'm grateful to share a story that did not end in tragedy, but instead highlights the value of life, a life that under this bill would be at risk of losing access to essential care. This young man represents countless others who would also lose access to life-saving treatments. My community is not expendable. Their lives matter. As a called and ordained minister of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, I strongly oppose HF 10 and urge you to vote against it. Gracias for your time.
Thank you very much. Reverend Martinez, if you would, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am the Reverend David Larson Martinez, pastor at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Minneapolis. House File 10 entirely stands in opposition to my Christian values and starkly against the human values of those whom I am called to serve. I have personally been negatively affected by those who seek to limit access to state-funded educational institutions based on immigration status. In 2011, having received a full-ride scholarship to Indiana University, the Indiana legislature prohibited public institutions from offering financial aid to non-citizens. Overnight, I lost my full-ride scholarship and scrambled to complete my Bachelor of Arts degree. Then again, in 2016, while I was in seminary, with drastic changes made to the renewal process of legal immigration statuses, I lost financial aid. Over the course of a few months, I scrambled to complete my Master of Divinity degree. These experiences have led me to assert that our elected government must care for everyone, especially the least among us. As a Christian leader with negative experiences of similar legislation, I find that House File 10 is anti-Christian at its very core. In Christian sacred texts, Jesus is asked by people who think in hypotheticals. In paraphrasing gospel lessons, those around him ask Jesus, "When did we deny you access to humane care?" Jesus responds to them, "Any time you denied access to humane care to the least among you, you denied it to me." Jesus reminds us that we cannot exist in hypotheticals. Instead, we must realize that our actions which impact the least among us is who we really are. House File 10 seeks to enshrine into law literal denying of humane care to the least among us, restricting opportunities for people seeking an education. And if we claim to be people of faith and moral conviction, how can we justify not caring for the least among us? As a called and ordained minister of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, I ask you to reject House File 10 and instead work to build a better Minnesota for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Reverend Martinez. Members, I will also bring to your attention in your packet, there are some letters from various organizations, so you can read that at your discretion. Just wanted to make sure that we had brought that to your attention. So we will now move to member questions. And members, we are going to be voting on this bill today, and we would still like to be able to leave some time for the Historical Society. So member questions. I will start off with Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee, Representative Schultz. Excuse me. A couple of questions and then a comment. First, should undocumented folks pay taxes?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft. That's not what this bill pertains to. This pertains to the tax benefits that people who are not here legally would receive.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Next question. What would be the net impact of what you're proposing on our economy in Minnesota, considering that we would lose tax revenue as well as economic outputs? I imagine you would have looked at this. What would be the net impact?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The most recent figure, Representative Kraft, is that there are over 82,000 people who have broke our laws to come to Minnesota to benefit from public programs. That is the most recent number. And many of the policies that would be directly impacted by this bill were passed in the last 2 years under complete Democrat control, while the Walz administration helped bring about the greatest historical fraud in the history of our country. And this seeks to close those gaps and get to the point that we are supporting Minnesota citizens and those who are here legally. So, Representative Kraft, what you heard in testimony is interesting because there are plenty of Minnesotans who, plenty of people who are here in our state contributing to the economy across the board who are here legally and those without legal status. But what this bill says is that the benefits of public programs should be left for those who have legal status.
Representative Kraft, your comment?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, So nice talking points, Representative Schultz, but the facts are that undocumented folks pay about $222 million of taxes, and a study done in 2021 by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, as well as a paper from the Cato Institute a couple years later, said that the benefits that their taxes they provide outweigh the benefits they receive, not even counting the overall impact on our economy. I understand, Representative Schultz, that you're focused on costs in Minnesota. That's why I started with those questions. And I want to speak to some of the sentiments raised by the people that spoke for your bill, which I honor those sentiments and those concerns. But what we are seeing here is an extension of Trump MAGA othering. And what that is we have problems, we have issues, we have cost concerns. It's their fault. But no, it's not. The fault here is that you talk about wealth, you raise the point, ultimate redistribution of wealth. The ultimate redistribution of wealth is what is happening in our country from an economic and from a tax perspective. The Trump tax cuts would cost $4 trillion. The richest 0.1% of those would receive more total dollars in tax cuts than the 187 million families with incomes in the bottom 60%. The issue here, right, is not this issue. It's a distraction. The issue is that our economy is unfair to all but the wealthy. And this administration, and it feels like you're falling in lockstep with them, is hell-bent on making the rich richer and everyone else poorer. And so this is a distraction from the core issue, and I urge folks to vote no.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to all the testifiers, and I appreciate much of what was said here today. I do also want to thank the gentleman for his service in the military, and I want to know you to realize that in the last 2 years, we made marked improvements for veterans, including taking down the wait lists at our veterans' homes from over 600 to 300. And we still have a long ways to go, but we've also reached a virtual zero for homelessness for veterans in the state of Minnesota, and we continue to do that work. And so I think everyone around this table, regardless of party, agrees that our veterans, we owe them a debt of gratitude. So I want to say thank you for that. I do want to talk a little bit about this tax question again. You had said in your testimony, Representative, that undocumented people should not benefit from tax credits. But again, I just want to be very crystal clear, because we keep saying that that taxpayer dollars should not be going to serve the most vulnerable among us. But we also continue to jump completely past the fact that these are the folks who are paying $222 million in state and local taxes. They are contributing to the system each and every day. If you are an immigrant farm worker, which 86%, I believe it was, were immigrant farm workers, 46% of those currently have an undocumented status. And I just want to be clear that this is a civil penalty. A civil penalty. And so these are folks who are literally the blue-collar workers. They are the least among us. They are doing the back-breaking work out in the fields. And all that we do is say that if you get sick and you need to go to the hospital, which most folks will delay care because they live in the shadows. In fact, most immigrants are remiss to collect any service of any kind from the government, unless it's dire. And we're asking them here, but more importantly, when you talk about not taking these tax credits, I have to ask, and again, reminder, we heard from the Cato Institute, and the Chamber of Commerce, who are not exactly known for being liberal bastions, right? These are conservative groups who openly admit that the benefits that these folks are receiving is far under what they are paying into the system for you and me and everyone around this table. And I just want to be very clear about that. They are actually a net positive for everything they are doing for all of us. And so, and I want to say that as a matter of not leaning into these tax credits, I assume that that would require the Department of Revenue would have to filter by some sort of immigration status. And my understanding is that this bill path is going to Ways and Means and has not taken a step in taxes, which has a direct impact on what we're talking about here today. And so my motion would be that this bill gets re-referred to taxes, where the actual impact of this bill can be assessed, and we can determine what steps would be necessary to do that. And I would ask for a roll call.
President Bonner moves to refer House File 10 to taxes. The assistant will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Chair Nash.
Nope.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Clardy, yes.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Sexton.
No.
There being seven nays and six ayes, the motion to re-refer to taxes fails. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I have a question regarding how this would impact housing programs. In Minneapolis, we have a successful joint city and public school program called Stable Home, Stable Schools. As the name implies, its goal is to support student education by partnering with and compensating rental property owners to supply housing units for students and their families in need of that stability. My husband and I, we actually have a couple of housing units, and we participated in this program because we believe in its purpose. You know, these students are our future. We want to make sure that they have a good leg up to do that. So I'm wondering, you know, a number of those families could be families with mixed statuses. So I'm wondering, how would this bill work with those, and how with programs like this, and how would it impact families in their participation in Stable Home, Stable Schools?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jones. Great question. And just like any application, you would have eligibility requirements, and so this would add additional eligibility requirements per Section 1 of this bill to ensure that someone who is receiving a benefit that comes by way of estate tax revenue, that individual must be either a citizen of the United States or an alien lawfully present in the United States. Thank you.
Representative Jones, follow up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So you're clarifying then that a program that is operated by a city and by a public school would not be impacted by this bill.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned earlier, and as is stated in inclusion in the A2 amendment, it is specifically for those programs that are funded, in at least in part, by state tax revenue.
Representative Schultz.
Yes. So I guess thinking about that, so our schools receive state funding, and then this goes towards, you know, this housing program. So by that way, this program would be impacted.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Nothing Chair. Further? Yes, eligibility requirements would mean that anything that is based or in part or in totality by state tax revenue would need to have eligibility requirements that would state that this is to benefit people who are either citizens of the United States or people who are here lawfully in the United States but not citizens.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Jones, follow up.
Yeah, final. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. Yeah, I find that very concerning. I find that this is burdensome to a program that we know is successful. I think this bill is too broad. I think it's going to be difficult to enforce, and I think it's going to have a chilling effect on families. I think in general, immigration is a federal issue. One of the testifiers said there are legal ways to come into this country,
And to that, I say, good luck. As we heard, Ms. Decker noted, the legal route is a long and obstacle. It's a long obstacle course. Months, years, decades. Application lines are super long. I want to note that there was a bipartisan proposal in Congress last year on immigration. And although I didn't agree with everything in that proposal, it was important work to address this issue. But Trump turned Republicans against it for political purpose, so he could win political points. There is no real interest in true solutions on this issue. It's all about othering. It's about dividing and conquering, and that leaves us all poorer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In piggybacking off that last question about how this would impact programs that serve our children, I'm just curious. So the program that was referenced by Representative Jones, we have a Homework Starts with Home program that specifically works to keep kids from entering homelessness, and that includes immigrant families. So my question is, are you concerned about those kids?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support wholly the dignity of life.
Representative Howard.
Mr. Chair.
And you know that we don't ask motives, we don't impugn motives, and we don't hint at motives.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to get at, in this bill, do you have concerns that it will increase homelessness for children?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this bill is incredibly important for the people of Minnesota to ensure that we are supporting Minnesotans first.
Representative Howard?
Mr. Chair, I guess I heard a no there, since I was very...
I'm not sure you did. You should not jump to conclusions, Representative Howard, as you know.
All right, Mr. Chair, then I'll ask the question again specifically. Yes or no, are you concerned that this bill will increase homelessness for children in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
President Howard, follow up?
Well, Mr. Chair, this bill will increase homelessness for children in the state of Minnesota. It is a housing issue, so I will make a motion that this bill get referred to the Housing Committee. And I'll request a roll call vote.
Representative Howard requests that the bill be referred to the Housing Committee. The roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. Chair votes no.
Chair Nash.
No.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam. Representative Sexton.
No.
There being 7 no's and 6 yeses, the motion to refer to housing fails. Representative Clardy.
Mr. Chair, I'm not finished.
Representative Howard, briefly.
Representative Schultz, in your opening you said that families across the state are hurting and facing significant economic challenges. Can you point me to the place in your bill where you're doing anything to help those families who are hurting and facing significant economic challenges? How would this bill help those families across the state?
Representative Howard, are you asking questions pertaining to the jurisdiction of this committee in Section 1?
I'm asking questions about the whole bill. I'm asking where it addresses.
We have Section 1 before us.
Yeah, I'm asking about Section 1. Where in Section 1 will families who are hurting and facing significant economic challenges, as the author stated, was a purpose for bringing this bill forward, how are those families helped in Section 1?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill will help reduce the $100 million which has been provided for people who are here illegally and make sure that those tax dollars stay with Minnesotans first. Thank you.
Representative Howard, follow up.
Mr. Chair.
Because we have some other members.
Yeah, no, this is an important bill. So those $100 million, does this bill allocate those in any way?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a surprise to me that after over $18 billion of a surplus being wasted, that we are having to make tough decisions so that we can put Minnesotans first.
Representative Howard?
So the answer is no. And I really listened to the testimony, and I really appreciate the folks. Ms. Tuma, who talked about the health care and the choices that folks are struggling with, having to afford whether to pay for their medical bills or pay for their costs. Your bill does nothing, nothing to make health care more affordable for those families. And actually, when you look at the bills you've introduced, you would do harm to those families. You would take away paid family medical leave. You would take away earned sick and safe time for those families. So let's just keep an eye on the ball about what where the sort of impacts for those hardworking families that we supposedly care so much about would be. Mr. Behrens, is it? I want to thank you for your service. You spoke eloquently about why we need to look at reallocation and support our homeless veterans. I would note that every member on this side of the aisle voted against direct investments to help our homeless veterans last session in the budget we passed, and that I scanned the bill introductions. There's not a single bill offered by Republicans to address homeless veterans in the state of Minnesota, not a single one. And so, members, let's just see this bill for what it is. It's an attempt to distract us from the real issues. There's not a single thing in this bill to make childcare more affordable for families, not a single thing to make housing more affordable for families, not a single thing to make healthcare more affordable for families. This is about punching down and beating up on immigrant families, and it's a disgrace, and I urge a no vote.
Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Nash. So this bill prohibits financial assistance to those that are not lawfully present in the United States. As of 2022, there have been 731 immigrant veterans in the United States service. Nearly 94,000 of them have been deported. So in this case, you're wondering how confusing the fluidity and legal status is. That's an example. So in the last 30 years, with this being a fluid system, the veterans programs provide direct financial assistance using state tax dollars. So I'll make the motion to re-refer this to the Veterans Committee and request a roll call.
Representative McLarty moves to refer House File 10 to Veterans. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
No.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam. Representative Sexton.
No.
There being seven nays and six yeses, the motion does not prevail. Lead Cleavorn to close.
Thank you. This bill is so harmful in so many ways, and I think our religious leaders today said it best. While there have been members of this committee who have attacked the DFL trifecta for not respecting Christianity, and I won't call that member out of this committee, but I find this bill to be at its very core hateful. That's all I can say about the bill. It is othering, as has been discussed today. It does not uphold the dignity of humanity in any way, shape, or form. It harms children. It harms families. It does not understand the difficulty of the immigration process. My children's birth certificates are in French. My children are U.S. citizens, have always been U.S. citizens. I don't understand from a local impact how, and maybe you can answer this question for me. This is a direct question. Help me understand how the people who are to implement this bill will know the legal status of an individual.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleavorn. For any program, where there are, there is an application, there would be a question of, that pertains specifically to their lawful status in the United States.
Representative Cleghorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Help me understand the process. How does that work? You're saying it's going to happen, but you're not telling me the process.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleghorn. And I'm going to use the specific other sections of the bill to give you an example. For both the North Star promise.
We are only discussing section one.
Representative Cleghorn, we're going to speak through the chair.
Are we opening up the rest of the bill, Mr. Chair?
We are not.
Then we speak to section one, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleghorn. So let's use a tax credit as an example. There were tax credits that were passed in the last session where the eligibility requirements changed for that tax credit. And so when you are filing your taxes, this would force those tax credits to ensure that you are a lawful resident of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Cleghorn.
Thank you. Representative, if you would please help me understand how a school, how a county, how a municipality who has no access to your tax returns would have any idea how to implement this section one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very, every entity will find a different way depending upon the program that they are working through, including the tax credits.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cleghorn.
We have no fiscal note to this bill, right? And you were saying every entity, so every state agency, every municipal program, every county program will find its way. Where's the fiscal note to help us understand what the cost would be to training or developing those protocols?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have requested that fiscal note. It has been outstanding for over a month at this point, and I had even been told it should arrive yesterday. So while I wish that that was here before us so that we could all debate that, this A2 amendment that we adopted to the bill helps clarify each of those changes to ensure that it is a state agency or a political subdivision that must ensure these eligibility requirements.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cleghorn, conclusion, then we're going to move to a vote.
I still have more questions, Mr. Chair. This bill is, you've asked for it to go to Ways and Means. We have no fiscal note. Was a local impact statement requested? Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Yes.
And.
Lead Cleghorn.
Thank you. Where is it?
Representative Schultz.
Waiting.
Mr. Chair.
Cleghorn.
I have heard a motion to move this to local government for preemption reasons. I've heard a motion to refer it to taxes, to housing, to veterans. I'm being told that there's no fiscal note. I'm being told there's no local impact note. I'm being told, trust me, all of these entities that are going to be impacted by this bill will just miraculously know how to deal with it, and we are going to rush it to Ways and Means, and I think we all know the reason it's being rushed out of committee. It is not ready to leave committee. There are questions about how this bill will be implemented, and there are questions about who will be harmed and who will be helped. And to Representative Howard's point, there is absolutely nothing in this bill that is going to help any of the concerns that we heard from the individuals who testified at your request in this committee. So this bill is not ready. And, Mr. Chair, I would ask that we please table this bill, and I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Cleghorn moves to table House File 10, requests a roll call. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
No.
Vice Chair Davis.
No.
Representative Anderson. Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Clardy.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Quam. Representative Sexton.
There being 7 nays and 6 ayes, the motion table fails. Representative Schultz, to your bill. Conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the conversation that we've had today, and to each of the testifiers, thank you for taking the time to come down here and to share your concerns with this bill. As a reminder to each of the members here, This bill is about ensuring that tax dollars follow people who are here with lawful legal status, that we are ensuring that our tax dollars aren't benefiting those who chose to break the law, and to ensure that we take the first step towards ensuring that we have a balanced budget in Minnesota, and that we have a public process to ensure that Minnesotans are at the table for that conversation. And I appreciate your support of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair renews his motion
Mr.
that
Chair,
House File 10 as
roll
amended
call,
be
please.
Referred to Ways and Means. A roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. The assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Bonner.
Yes. No, I'm sorry.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick. Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative
Kwan. Yes.
Representative Sexton. Yes.
There being seven ayes and six nays, the bill is being referred as amended to Ways and Means. Members, we are not going to have time for the Historical Society today. We will try to fit them in at a separate time. We are adjourned.